From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and our connection this hour was made late last month when a local brewery shut its doors. Nedlow Brewing in Bloomfield closed after almost 3 years in operation. And the news led to a question. Is the region facing a craft beer bubble? Well, as Bruce Springsteen once sang, everything dies, baby, that's a fact. But craft beer? Really? We're going to delve into that question coming up here. But first, we head out to a local village where the neighbors are disposing of all kinds of things that have died, recently or not so recently.
Bring out your dead! Bring out your dead!
Rochester Fast Ferry!
Long dead, that's right. We'll take it. Bring out your dead!
Bipartisanship.
Sadly dead, but dead indeed. Bring out your dead!
Fanny packs, ripped denim, velour tracksuits.
Dead, 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 thank goodness. Bring out your dead!
Juice cleansers.
Should be dead.
Pumpkin spice.
Should be dead.
Craft beer.
Wait, what?
Craft beer.
I'm not dead yet.
He says he's not dead. I can't take him.
I'm bursting with savory goodness.
He's a bubble waiting to burst. There's just too much of him. I'm overwhelmed.
My evolving flavors cascade down your throat. I'm so balanced, so robust, so now.
He sounds positively undead to me.
Listen, just do me a favor and take him.
Nah, not this one. You're misunderstanding it completely. A slight bubble is not death. And craft beer is not Crystal Pepsi. Not by a long shot.
Fine then, but what about something that's most certainly dead? Rotting in the ground, dead, dead, dead.
Go on then, enlighten me.
Kevin Spacey's career. But not craft beer. We're here to talk this hour about what is a bubble and what the truth is about the beer scene in our region. Will Cleveland from the Democrat and Chronicle wrote a nice piece about this. And yeah, when Nedlow closed, there's a lot of talk about, you know, are we saturated, that kind of a thing. And as someone who has covered the wine scene in the Finger Lakes region, there was a lot of talk for many years about what the saturation point is and what sort of levels off. But it's not death. Don't you worry. Let's go ahead and welcome our panel. We're going to have some fun talking about the beer scene in Western New York this hour. And Will Cleveland, you're the reason we're here. Thanks for doing that.
Hey, thanks for having us. It was a fun conversation to have.
Did you enjoy that little throwback there? Do you know what we were referencing?
I don't actually.
Oh, come on.
I mean, everyone in the room. I mean, I was giggling. It's like felt like I was in on the joke.
John Mervine, you know, right?
I do.
Co-founder of Fifth Frame Brewing. If we were bringing out your dead, Fifth Frame would be the last thing in line. It's doing. How are you doing with Fifth Frame?
Well, I'm here. I'm alive. Doctor said I'm healthy. Yeah, we're doing well. We've been open for just a couple weeks now with our coffee shop and kitchen, and for everyone still asking, beer is on its way, and we're probably, let's say, a month and a half away.
All right, very good. Well, we'll talk a lot more about not only what you're going to be doing, but your decision to open now as you look at the landscape and decide, you know, is there saturation? Is there an opening here? So John's here. Don Cotter is co-founder of Naked Dove Brewing Company. And Naked Dove's been there for how long now?
Yeah, this weekend we actually celebrate our 7th anniversary.
Wow, so, congratulations.
Yep, a little festivity going on this weekend to celebrate that.
So. Oh, we'll make sure we'll let our listeners know about that. Thanks for being here, Don.
Absolutely.
Jen Newman, CEO and owner of Young Lion Brewing Company. And what's the story of Young Lion?
Young Lion opened in Canandaigua about 4 months ago and doing great and having a wonderful time.
All right. So what I want all three of our, can I call you brewers? What's the term here? Is that good enough? No.
Sure. All of us have different roles.
There's only one of us who's actually a brewer here.
That's right.
But in the brewing world, yeah. You know, you're all representing brewers. And I want to ask all of you, just your companies, to kind of set the scene for how large it is. So Naked Dove, what's the size of the company?
Yeah. So we started 7 years ago and we are about a 3,000-barrel brewery. So, you know, a nice mid-sized brewery for a local craft brewery. What's interesting about all of us in this room, as well as kind of the whole craft scene, is that everybody's got different business models, different sizes, different ways that they go to market. And so, really, our size is really draft only and all within about a 35-mile radius. And so we've kind of kept it local and kept it draft only so far. News on the horizon regarding where we're going to go from that. But as a result, you know, we're kind of very, very local. As we talk about the strength of the scene, local is key. We haven't tried to go to Buffalo, Rochester, or Syracuse. Mm-hmm. We're just kind of Canandaigua up into Rochester.
All right, very good. That's Naked Dove's story. Jen from Young Lion, again, only 4 months old, but what's the size?
So we started a little bit bigger. We have about 10,000 barrel capacity. We're not doing that at the moment. Distributing locally as well, and I agree completely with what Don's saying, going local is the way to go. We do have a canning line coming in, so we are packaging. We're actually releasing in Wegmans on November 9th. We're going to do a fresh campaign with them where we're going to can one day and then actually release it, and it's going to be 24 hours old, you know, in the in Wegmans. A little bit of a different model, both draft and canning.
All right, very good. And John Mervine, Fifth Frame, with a company that's sort of still in its infancy, but what's the plan?
The plan, Stan, is we're a 10-barrel brew house, we'll be able to... pivot on that, and we also have a 15-kilo roaster as well, which kind of talks to, or something I hope to talk about later on, about diversity. And then we also have an open kitchen, so it's kind of a three-prong attack in terms of business models.
Okay, but on the beer side, 10.
10-barrel, yeah, 20.5 kegs a pop.
10, that's small.
It is 10. Well, I mean, when you figure Naked Dove is 15 and Young Lion is 35.
Very good. Okay, so... You're looking at three different sizes here, but as Will Cleveland's piece points out here, sometimes it's easy to lose sight of the fact that we're still in a country where most of the beer is brewed by, you know, massive.
Exactly.
That is still true.
Craft beer is still such a tiny percentage of the actual market in this country. I mean, I think the last figure I saw was somewhere in the range of 11 or 12% is dominated, is craft beer controlled at this point. You know, and that's using the commonly accepted definition of craft being, you know, independently operated, less than 6 million barrels a year. And there's a third part I'm missing, isn't there?
Less than
25% ownership of a company outside of beer can own you. So... what Rochester has is local, hyper-local beer. You know, you have breweries that are concerned with supplying the neighborhood or supplying, you know, Monroe County, or like Don said, you know, Naked Dove, you know, they self-distribute. They bring all of their kegs by hand only within 35 miles of Canandaigua.
Okay, and so, listeners, you want to read Will's piece, and you should. We'll link to it from the Democrat and Chronicle. It's headlined, Is There a Craft Beer Bubble in Rochester? Not With Our Insatiable Thirst. We're going to explore some of those reasons that this is not really a bubble, not in classic economic terms here, but there's obviously a natural progression that happens when you see a market grow with craft breweries, and Will's piece did a nice job with that. We're going to try to answer your questions. We could have filled the studio many times over with all the many people on this scene, so... you know, if you're not represented with your brewery here, we'll get you on a different day. Thanks for all the interest. Also, thanks to Chris Holden for his great voice work to get our hour going there. And if you want to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. So, Will, let's start with that question. You say there's not a bubble.
No.
But what is happening?
Well, it's the natural business cycle. I mean, craft beer is slowing down. The number that I was given from Dr. Bart Watson, who's the chief economist for the National Brewers Association in Colorado, said that, you know, mid-year this year, craft beer sales were only up 5%, which is still growth, but it's down from 18%, which is what it was, I think it was 3 years earlier. So sales are slowing, but openings aren't. And you look in New York State where, you know, since New York State Brewers Association kind of came onto the scene in around 2013, 2012, somewhere in that range, we've only had 5 breweries close in the state while we've had hundreds open. And only one of the breweries that has closed, St. Lawrence up in the North Country, is the only one that closed because of financial reasons. So I think people misuse the term bubble. You know, bubble would be the entire industry collapsing, and that's not going to be the case in this state.
When it comes to Ned Lowe, yeah, people are talking about that. What do you find out about that story?
Honestly, I haven't been able to find out anything. They haven't. The Holdens haven't talked to me in the 3 years they've been open. Never had the friendliest relationship with them, so I can't really speculate for why they closed. But I can assume that it wasn't because of financial reasons.
Yeah, I will say, and let me turn to Don Cutter, because Naked Dev is sort of, you're the old player in the room right
That's
now.
That's right.
And so let me turn to you for a couple of things here. First of all, there was a company in Henrietta that does some solar that closed, I think, earlier this year or maybe last year. And that prompted this wave of emails we got from people saying, whoa, is solar not as much the future as we thought? And you know, in business cycles, there's all kinds of reasons that companies close. Sometimes they're poorly managed. Sometimes people change what they want to do. Sometimes there are personal circumstances. Sometimes the market simply dictates what can work in certain places. But it doesn't. One closing doesn't mean, you know, a market is collapsing. That said, when you look at the net load, that kind of thing, what's the reaction in the industry to that?
Yeah, so the big reaction in the industry, obviously, immediately is, you know, what the heck, right? It's somebody that's only been in business for 3 years, built a beautiful facility for themselves, one that we would all, that we all do envy. And, you know, out of the blue, they decide to close their doors. I think what it speaks to, and once again, not having had a chance to speak to the Holdens either, Josie and Nate, you know, great people. They had a great little run going. I think it speaks to the fact that people get into the industry for different reasons and with different expectations. And once again, as I mentioned earlier, with different business models in mind. If you look at the three of us in this room, all of us have different sizes and different models and different expectations. So when we opened up 7 years ago, we were the first in Ontario County. So now there's about 13 in Ontario County. So
is that good or bad for you?
See, what's interesting is it's been great for us because, and we have five, you know, Jen to my right here. Jen opened up 5 months ago in Canandaigua. Now five breweries just in little old Canandaigua. And all I can do is speak for our business. Our business continues to be very, very strong. So it just brings more people. And especially if you look at Canandaigua, we say, okay, come into our taste room, go see Jen. Jen's got people coming into her taste room and she sends them down to see us. Same thing for Three Huskies and the other breweries in the region. So as long as the growth continues, right, we get to love each other, right? Once the growth stops, then we got to duke it out in the street, right? But we talked about the numbers. I mean, 11% of craft nationally. We're a little bit higher than that in Rochester, about 15%. If you go to Portland, well, Oregon as a state is twice as big as we are as a state, and their Portland proper is about four times or five times as big as we are in Rochester. So there's a lot of running room, a lot of room for all of us to participate and have a piece of the pie.
Well, when you opened 7 years ago, you're the first in your geographical space. Now you said again there's five.
That's correct.
And if that's still good for you, is 10 going to be a problem? Is 20? What's the number where you start to go, well, I'm not really sure?
Well, once again, as long as that 85%, what happens is people keep leaving, you know, not to be offensive to Bud Light and Coors Light and Miller Light and all those brands. That's where the majority of the consumers are today. But it's a one-way street. Once people leave those brands to drink our better beers, they don't go back. So as long as that stream continues, as long as the 85 becomes 80 and the 80 becomes 70, there's a lot of room for us for a long time.
So let's ask Jen then, you know, you looking at that geographical space, you guys open, and what's the consideration on the business side that says, absolutely, there's an opening for us, there's space for us to participate alongside? It's kind of a still a rising tide lifting all boats situation, as opposed to now we're in market saturation and we're in trouble.
Well, to piggyback off of what Don said, I mean, 89% of the market is still left to go, and it's an artisanship industry, and it's a high quality ingredient industry, and so we have that left to go. The other thing that we're finding that I love in our tasting room is that we serve wine, and we do that with a purpose. One, to be inclusive, to bring people in, but two, we find that a lot of wine drinkers actually convert as well. I mean, people that come in and say, you know, I'm on this tour and I'm on a wine tour, but I'm, you know, stopping at this brewery. We say, you know what, try this Goza, you know, give it a shot. And actually, you know, the best moments are when those people that say, I don't drink beer, but, and then they try and say a sour or a Berliner Weiss, and they're like, you know what, I really like this. So that's another example of, you know, where the market still has room to growth. It's not just the beer drinkers.
Let me ask, our other guest as well. And then in a moment, I'm going to read an email that, Will, you probably won't be surprised that Stefan Fleming, Assistant Director of Industry Development.
Definitely not.
From Empire State Development, just sent me an email with numbers, because I think they are genuinely, over at Empire State Development, genuinely, I think they identified food and wine, beer included, spirits included, as a real economic driver a number of years ago, and they are pursuing that, not just in a way that says, oh, we want to show up and cut a ribbon. I mean, like, they're really into this stuff.
I mean, say what you want about our governor, but he's been very beverage-friendly.
He has, and his team is very sincerely invested in this. So in a moment, I'll read some of what Stefan just sent me, but let's see what John thinks about, you know, the space in the market for another player here. So, again, where's your location?
We're located at retail spots down at 155 St. Paul Street in the St. Paul Quarter, just a couple of storefronts in from Andrew Street.
So
actually right in your backyard.
And you know, I know certainly we'll talk a little bit later this hour about diversity, as you said, because you're not just a brewer. But when it comes to that space, what did you see that told you, you know, there's room for us here?
I think where we see the most room for improvement is that, you know, the things that are in your control. You know, we're talking a lot of macro, you know, what's going on in the country and that. But realistically, the things that we can control within Fifth Frame and us as entrepreneurs and brewers and owners in this room is that we can, you know, you can control your marketing, you can control your branding, your customer service, which is becoming ever more important than ever before. And I think something that's really been echoed for a long time or the past couple years very strongly is quality. And, you know, to Don's, you know, to the macro level, we can do things that others can't do. And by controlling that, you know, we talk about where we are in the market, you know, we're not in our growth phase anymore, but we're also not maturing. This is strictly, I look at it as an inflection point. So, you know, or the adolescence that Will and I had talked about before. So, and I think that's the ability for us to really kind of, you know, grow out of our training wheels and then, you know, move up to the 10 speed, if you will.
Okay. Stefan writes this. He says, look at the growth. Here are some numbers that you ought to know. He says, in the first quarter of 2011, there were 56 licensed breweries in New York State. As of today, 375. And those 375 licensed breweries hold 436 licenses. Alcohol manufacturers can hold more than one at the same premise, as I think you have mentioned in your piece as well. So Will knows all of these things, but here's some more of the numbers. 185 farm brewing licenses, 177 micro brewing licenses, 40 restaurant brewing licenses, 10 brewing licenses. These are your large breweries. He says North American Breweries, FX Matt, Brooklyn Brewery, 24 farm brewery branch office licenses. So, and then he says for the 9-county Finger Lakes region, which is Monroe, Ontario, Yates, Seneca, Wayne, Genesee, Livingston, Orleans, and Wyoming, there are 50 licensed breweries which hold 57 licenses. Will, you were kind of swimming in these numbers and having to put your piece together, but clearly you look at these, there's no question that growth has been significant. I mean, that's not a doubling of a business. That's going from infancy to a big, big number in just a few number of years.
Yeah, it's been pretty insane to just watch the amount of growth. I mean, it's certainly given me no shortage of stories to tell. And, you know, I have a list of about 15 places sitting at my desk that I'm just trying to monitor right now, you know, trying to keep track of what's opening next so I can stay ahead of things and, you know, get articles written before some of these places open. And it's really hard to carve out time because it's just, it seems like every month I have two or three new stories to tell.
But do all of our guests in studio agree that Empire State and New York State has been sort of putting their money where their mouth is, or Don, or misunderstanding it?
No, absolutely. I mean, the state has been very, very strongly supportive of the industry, including carving out some new you know, terms and new licenses like the farm breweries to try to attract a different brewing cycle, as well as to take a look at you know, how can we help the economy from a growth standpoint, from a farmer standpoint as well.
Okay. Jen, thoughts on that?
Totally agree. And there's still some work to be done. We still see some tweaking in the farm brewing licenses, and it would be nice if it was a little easier to get your license. But other than that, yeah, no, they're definitely making great strides in a very short period of time.
Okay. John?
Yeah, agreed. The you know, the barriers are still there, but the opportunity, you know, the state and city is both coming together, and it's, let's just say it was a little bit easier than it, maybe this year than it was 7 years ago to do something like this.
Yeah, I'll concur with that. We did it all with paper. You guys get to do it electronically. Yeah,
so. Yeah, I mean, because John's in a unique position because he's the only person in this room who's opened two breweries. He was, you know, was.
I don't recommend it.
By the way, Don's beard is the shortest I've seen in the craft beer industry. John's is exactly what you think you'd see if you're looking at the craft beer. In fact, when Budweiser wanted to make fun of the craft beer industry with their really, really scared Super Bowl ad that showed just how small and scared they are of craft beer, they got a guy that looked just like you. What is the, is that one of the barriers for entry? Is like you must do this beard. What if you cannot grow a beard?
Then I think they put you in the back office. It's called accounting.
Let me grab our first phone call. Paul in Rochester, who happens to be the executive director of the New York State Brewers Association. Hi, Paul.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. I just wanted to add one comment, you know, about the industry. You know, we're at 375 breweries now. I think, you know, we project that 500, that New York could easily sustain 500 breweries as long as the quality of the beer stays high. That's really what it's about. If you look at other cities like Portland and Asheville and some of these other cities that have 50, 60, 70, 80 breweries in these cities alone, the reason why they're able to sustain that is because of the quality of beer, and that's really what it's going to become about.
Well said there, Paul. Why don't you stay in line for a second, because I want our guest to respond to that. I had it in my notes that we're going to get to. We're talking about the business side, but I think the quality has to be mentioned here. And I am not at all an expert enough to say, you know, Rochester scene, rivals, you know, whatever. But I can tell you that I'm always impressed with the quality. When I have a chance to pop around the scene locally, whether it's going into an actual tasting room or different events. And Will, for you, I mean, this part of what you do as a beer columnist, how do you assess the quality of the scene?
I think the quality is ever rising. I still think we have a long way to go. There's still, you know, it's painful to admit this, but there's still a lot of bad beer in this city. And
not at this table.
No, definitely not. I wouldn't invite we wouldn't invite people we didn't think made good beer. But so I think that's going to be where you're going to see the shakeout. It's going to be, you know, these breweries that aren't making good beer. You know, that's, you know, the whole thing of people voting with their dollars.
So this is good here. It's good to have a guy like Will who can make a blunt statement like that, because everyone else at the table is about to be really diplomatic, unless John agrees. Is there bad beer in Rochester? You don't have to name names if you don't want to. You can say what their names rhyme with or whatever.
You can't bait me. I think taste is subjective. I truly do. There's some people that just maybe are accustomed to one style, that maybe aren't willing, maybe a little beer stubbornness, in the sense that they might just like one thing and they'll stick with that, and they think that theirs is the holy grail. But I think if you keep an open mind and an open mouth, you can really try a lot of things that are out there. But I do say, you know, keep trying what else is across the country. No one's perfect. It's human nature. We're not built that way. So as brewers and people in the beer scene, I think there's always room to make things better.
I'm going to ask our other guest that same question, and I asked Paul to stay there for a second, but I do want to go back to Will with one point here, because when Will mentioned, you know, there's a good amount of bad beer in Rochester. In the Finger Lakes wine scene, for example, you went back to the 1980s, 1990s, when a lot of growth started to happen, there was a good amount of what you would call bad wine, and I mean flawed wine, or occasionally poorly, clearly not well made. That is not the case anymore. There's a plenty of wine that isn't sort of inspiring, or maybe, you know, sort of world-beating, but there's very little bad wine. The quality of the actual winemaking is clean, it's technically sound, it's really well-trained, and it's just amazing. I mean, it's almost like Peter Bell, who's a winemaker at Fox Run, has cloned himself, and he's everywhere now, and everybody can make good wine out of your shoe. I mean, it's amazing what they can do. So I don't know if when you say there's a good amount of bad beer, are you saying for your taste as a critic or as a writer, or are you saying that occasionally there's technically unsound beer?
There's some brewers in the area that don't feature cleanly fermented beer, but I've also written off some of them and then been impressed with some of these places' recent efforts. So I think people are open to criticism, and I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, people pushing each other to make better beer, and, you know, people gaining experience. And a lot of it also has to do, I think, with having Genesee in Rochester, you know, operating their sensory programs and opening their labs to local breweries to, you know, bring in their beer so they can, you know, test the yeast health and, you know, test for off flavors and things like that. So I think things are getting better, but like I said, I think there's still bad beer, and I think there's still beer that's not cleanly fermented. And I think with us being in our adolescence, I think people are becoming, consumers are becoming more attuned to tasting some of these off flavors. You know, a beer that doesn't finish as dry as it does, or beer that has, you know, like diastole, like buttery off flavors in it, you know, things like that. So I think people are beginning to recognize that, and I think beer drinkers are becoming smarter, so I think hopefully brewers will recognize that and become better too.
Don, who makes the worst beer in Rochester?
That is a question I'm definitely not answering.
No.
But I will build off of what Will has stated. So first off, when breweries open, they're testing out new equipment. You know, if you're a home brewer and then you're starting off to brew on brand new equipment, you can't expect to hit it exactly right the first time. So to Will's point, sometimes you taste somebody's beer that they just opened, try them again 6 months later, because invariably they will have dialed in their system and gotten better. Just like when a restaurant opens up, don't go the first week and then never go back again. You got to go back to that restaurant again. So I highly encourage people to do that. And one of the reasons, not only do they get better because they dial in their equipment, but we have an unbelievably supportive craft beer community here. There's an association that that Joe Bustos from NAB and Chris Spinelli from Rock Brewing started called the 585 Brewers Association. And it's called an association, a very loose term, because we used to get together once a month and we drink each other's beers. And we talk to each other, and people, once again, because the industry is growing and we're all doing pretty well, everybody shares thoughts with each other. Hey, you know, this tastes pretty good, but I think maybe you can dial it in a little bit here, there, whatever. And people listen to each other. The sensory panel that NAB provides for everybody and also goes out into the community, into breweries, and helps them with their sensory analysis with all their employees. All those things are designed for the community at large to get better. I'm a real Pollyanna kind of guy. Will knows this. Jen knows this. Truly, we all try to make each other better. And through that, the industry, once again, going back to the bubble, if that makes beer better and the category continues to grow, then there's no bubble in sight, because we're all going to just get better at what we do.
I love that. And as a critic, you probably do too. Well, one of the things that drove me nuts writing about the Finger Lakes wine scene was how many winemakers don't drink wine from around the world or don't get together and are willing to be critically tough with each other. You got to have a thick skin if you want to get better. And it sounds like what Don's describing.
There's a lot of collaboration and camaraderie in our scene, which I think is producing better and better beer every day.
All right, that's great. And Jen wants to jump in with her favorite worst brewery.
You're not beating me with that either. But the one part I would add, I agree with everything that these guys said, but I would say that nobody does it like Rochester. So I think that what Don was saying about the incredibly supportive, you know, the beer industry just by nature is an incredibly collaborative industry.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you the hours that actually John and Don have sat with me, you know, when I was opening the brewery and being supportive. But to have that collaborative industry in Rochester where we are so open and so willing to help each other, it's been a really exciting place to be right now.
And that is
in the beer world.
That is not necessarily always the case everywhere you go in food and ag and, you know, and drink. It's not. It's very competitive, obviously. But I love that ethos and spirit that you see all throughout the Finger Lakes Rochester region when it comes to wine, beer, spirits. It's just wonderful to see. So I think Jen's on the money there. And before we let Paul go, you got a favorite beer you want to point to, or anything that really excites you that's going on now, Paul?
I don't know if I have a favorite beer. It's kind of like saying what's your favorite child, you know? I mean, you really can't pick.
Everybody has a favorite child. You're lying.
I am. You got me on that one. I just want to piggyback one last thing on Don. Don sort of nailed it on the hit it on the head. You know, this is a handcrafted product. And it's made with a lot of different ingredients, a lot of it grown right here in New York, and there's going to be a lot of variables to it. That's the beauty of it. So some of it's not going to be good, and a lot of it's going to be good, but that's, you know, go out and try it. Brewers are like chefs. These are their recipes, and if you don't like it, well, then try something else. You're not going to like them all. It's all part of the process.
Paul, thanks for the phone call. Fun stuff. Nice to hear from you.
Thanks, Adam.
So Paul is calling here, and we are here because Will Cleveland wrote this piece that you ought to check out for the Democrat and Chronicle titled, Is There a Craft Beer Bubble in Rochester? Not With Our Insatiable Thirst. But he's not writing as a cheerleader. He's writing it from the perspective that says, if you hear about a brewery closing like Nedlow, you might think, well, is that a sign that things are changing? And the answer is, you know, not really. But the things that are changing are that, you know, we've had explosive growth, and it's not going to continue at that rate forever, but it can still, we can still see some growth, and we can still see, I think, a lot of really interesting things happening. I want to get back to your phone calls in a second, so Thomas and Rochester, stay there. Matt, others who have written in, we're going to take your comments and questions. Listeners, if you want to jump in with 844-295-TALK, talking craft beer and the scene here in Western New York, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. My guests include Will Cleveland from the Democrat and Chronicle, Jen Newman, CEO and owner of Young Lion Brewing Company, Don Cotter, co-founder of Naked Dove Brewing, and John Mervine, who is the co-founder of Fifth Frame Brewing. They're all with us. We're coming right back with them after our only break of the hour on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, in our first hour, an update from Puerto Rico. We'll talk about recovery efforts and local efforts here to help those on the ground on the island. Then in our second hour, Tom Golisano joins us in studio. The Paychex founder and local philanthropist talks about taxes, and he's got a lot to share. You might have seen recent news stories. We will expound on all of those issues and more with him at 1 p.m.
This is WXXI AM Rochester, WRUR FM and HD Rochester, WEOS FM and HD Geneva, and WXXI FM HD2 Rochester.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Episcopal Senior Life Communities at Valley Manor, offering custom apartment homes for independent seniors seeking an active lifestyle, located on East Avenue in the Arts and Cultural District. For more information, call 442-6450.
New York City, a day after a truck killed cyclists and pedestrians.
New Yorkers are strong, New Yorkers are resilient, and our spirit will never be moved by an act of violence, an act meant to intimidate us.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly, the latest on that attack, and how Russia used social media to influence the 2016 election. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Adam Chodak. I'm just kidding. I'm Evan Dawson. I think Paul thought I was Adam Chodak. That's all right, Paul. I forgive you. That has happened so many times. It's amazing. It's really... Adam and I are good friends, but we have been in the same room together, and we are not the same. Welcome back to Connections. We're talking craft beer. If you're watching on City 12 in the city of Rochester, which you should every Wednesday at 1 p.m., we've got the great team at City 12 who brings that to you, and you see me drinking something, I would like John to point out what I'm drinking because I'm not breaking any rules. Go ahead, John.
It's brown. It's lightly to no carbonation. No, it's coffee.
It's
100% Colombian coffee.
So everyone who's looking is saying, what are you doing there? Is that like a stout or something? Colombian coffee. And when did you brew this?
This was brewed about 10 minutes before we came on air.
That's awesome. And it is awesome, by the way.
Well, thank you.
You want to tell me why it's awesome?
Wade Reed, our roaster, because he's awesome. I had nothing to do with this. I'm just a mule. But no, Wade's been great. He's one of our partners, and his selection of our coffee beans has been phenomenal for out of the gates, opening up to the community.
Gotcha. Well, Wade is one of those guys who, if he's drawing latte art in your latte, he can draw, you know, literally anything. He could draw like, you know, a thoughtful cactus dancing on a clown's back holding the world. I mean, it's just like, whatever it is, he can.
I've seen it.
He actually can. It's really amazing. So I'm not surprised that Wade is behind this. So let me grab our phone call, and then we'll come back to some of your email questions. But let's grab Thomas in Rochester, who's been waiting. Go ahead, Thomas.
Hi, Evan. Hi, everybody. So I had a question about some labeling. You know, it still kind of blows my mind that everything else that we eat or ingest, you know, has a list of ingredients and calories and whatnot in it. But you throw alcohol in it, and you don't have to put anything on the label. I know there's a bit of a movement from some of the bigger guys to start doing that, like at least putting calorie content on. So I was curious what the panel's view was towards whether that would be a good thing for craft brewing or not. You know, some of the big guys might be using ingredients that people don't want to see, like preservatives, other acids, or whatnot. But at the same time, you know, craft beers tend to be a bit on the heavier side, as I think all of us find out when we first get into it and put on weight. So it's very interesting to see what you guys think about it.
Thomas, thanks very much. Let's go around the table. Don?
Yeah, I'll jump into that. We're not yet packaging, although we will be soon. But I think that what you find is within the craft brewing community, certainly from an ingredient standpoint, there is a kind of a proactive approach. We try to tell people what we brew with. It's one of the things, once again, as we talked about earlier about the collaboration, we tell the other brewers and we tell consumers, these are the malts that we're using, these are the hops that we're using. From an ingredient standpoint, we're already there. I think that in general, we try to avoid caloric content because that is the negative of drinking beer. The beer belly is not a myth, as most of us can attest to. And so we try to keep away from caloric. We're governed by a different governmental body than the FDA. So as a result, we don't have to do some people are espousing. I think that people, the light beer industry, which is the majority of the big beer industry, would like caloric content because they're not players in this category. So as long as we can keep calories off the label, we're pretty happy to put everything else that we have on the label.
Jen and John, agree with that?
I totally agree with that. I actually think that craft beer, we actually try to sneak in what our ingredients are on our packaging, because we want to brag that we've got Citra in there, that we want to brag what kind of specialty malts we have in there, because our ingredients are so high end. The people that wouldn't benefit from that might be, you know, some of the bigger beers, what they might have. And I don't know. I'm just projecting.
Yeah, but do you have Beechwood?
I personally don't have Beechwood.
Nor rice.
maybe some high fructose corn syrup.
Beechwood aging is awesome. That's American right. consumers, amazing. John, any thoughts on that?
No, I think Jen nailed it. You know, as brewers and in craft beer industry, you're very proud of what you put in there. So you do want to make known of what's in there. There's no hiding whatnot. So I would... You know, in terms of us not having to label these things, it's nice that it's not another added cost into, you know, making our product. So, but if, you know, there's kind of rules of thumb out there. It's like, was it 3.4% or something like that is 100 calories. So you can kind of use rules of thumb. But, you know, if you're having a session and we're sitting here having five beers, the last thing I want to think about is, oh, 300, 250, 75.
Sure.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, let's enjoy ourselves.
As a writer and consumer? Are you thinking about those things, Will?
Never once considered that question, ever. I mean, I think most people look at me can tell that.
I didn't want to go there.
Oh, we're perfectly
Will.
Fine. You can tell, though, that I'm knowledgeable because I do my research.
He said it. I didn't say any of that stuff. That's Will Cleveland.
Hey, I like me. I'm fine with it.
Good. I like you,
Will's
too.
Will's a spelt 220 pounds,
yes,
just so you guys know.
Exactly.
Will is a beer columnist for the Democrat and Chronicle, who you ought to be reading, and we're here because of his piece about the so-called craft beer bubble, which isn't really a bubble.
Exactly.
But it's a great piece for the Democrat and Chronicle. Matt on Twitter says, how much do you New York State tax breaks have to do with opening breweries, and when do they end? Does the bubble burst when the tax breaks end? Don, what do you think about that?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, there's different tax breaks for different classifications of breweries. I think that certainly some of the breaks that have been provided to the farm breweries have kind of exacerbated and increased the speed that farm breweries have opened up. But you take us, when we opened up 7 years ago, there was a tax break that existed. It was a modest tax break. And we've received no new tax breaks in the last 7 years. We didn't start because of the tax break. We're not in business to try to get tax breaks. We're in business to build a business. And so the government's been very, very supportive in different areas. For those who are farm brewers in the room, perhaps those guys can speak to whether or not that encouraged them to get in the scene.
Yeah, I'm not getting any tax breaks. So there are some things that, you know, if you have a savvy accountant, you know there's some things with manufacturing that you can get some breaks on that you sort of need to be wise on how you do your accounting. But yeah, unless you're a farm brewery, there isn't any tax breaks on our level.
John.
No, I would say that, you know, you save maybe, you know, upfront, you know, $1,000 or so, or up to $2,000, you know, with consolidation of your licensees. But, you know, over the long term, it is not an impetus or a catalyst for opening a brewery, and not by any stretch of imagination.
So, Will, when you write about this scene then, and you think about what's coming next year, I think you mentioned in the piece that there's new breweries still to open, that you're almost constantly hearing about these kinds of things.
Yeah, I think we should have three open in Monroe County just in the next 2 months.
How, as a writer and a critic, do you evaluate them when they're opening, and how much space do you give them to grow? I think our guests have made really good points this hour that, you know, maybe you come out of the gate and it's exactly what you wanted, but I think everybody, whether you're a new restaurant, first night, do you want to be judged on the first night? You probably want someone to come back in like
judge,
6 months.
I don't judge breweries on the first batches.
Okay.
If you notice, when I write about a brewery opening, I write about the story behind the people opening the brewery, or what it means to that community, or how it fits into the larger Rochester scene. So I try to tell, you know, interesting stories about cool people is how I kind of approach it. I don't, you know, if I try some of the beers and I'm really impressed by some of them early on, I'll definitely mention that, just because I think it'll give people some more context. But in general, I don't really evaluate beers. I'm more of a storyteller.
More of a storyteller, sure. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's really the way to go. I mean, everyone's going to be grabbed by something slightly different. I mean, your favorite wine is not my favorite wine. Your favorite beer is not my favorite beer. Your favorite cocktail is not my favorite cocktail. But I think that's the beauty of it. But what I do want to ask our guests, if they think that there is, I got to be careful here, but I'll start with you, Don. Do you think there's an elevation in the American consumer's evaluation of beer quality? In other words, craft beer is, it's better than Bud. And you know what? Joe McBain made a great point on this program after that ridiculous Super Bowl ad. Joe said, at the very least, Budweiser is consistent. That is rock solid consistency. You know what you're getting. So you may not like it and you may like it, but you know exactly what it is. And that reliability is what they fill in the marketplace, and they do it well. And I remember Joe saying that, and I think he's right. So I will certainly give them that. That's important. But I think in terms of actual complexity of flavor and what we would probably even objectively call quality, craft beer is better. Do you think, Don, that we are moving in a direction that the American consumer is appreciating it more? And that is there going to be an equilibrium in the marketplace that says, you know, big beer is going to be X amount of the market and craft beer will be X and it'll sort of level off? Are we still kind of moving in this where it's going to pass? You know, where do you think that's going?
Well, so the shift continues to take place. And so until that stops, I'm going to take the positive side of that and say that we're going to continue to grab more and more of that consistent but relatively flavorless, big beer business that's out there.
They're scared of you, aren't they?
They're very scared. That's why they take shots at us. That's why they buy some of us. That's because they know they can't really do it on their own. So there's a couple of points I'd like to make in that regard. One is that definitely the craft beer scene has more flavor, more complexity, and most consumers, as I talked about, the one-way street, once they start going down that path, it is a path that, unless they're going to a golf tournament and they're going to drink 12, blue lights on the golf course, they're drinking better beer now forever. One of the reasons why we can cast, as brewers and as businesses, we can cast the net relatively wide is because we are casting the net relatively wide. We have very easier sessionable beers, maltier beers, or ones that are a little bit less complex, a little bit more accessible within our portfolios, all of our portfolios. And then we have more complex beers. For people that are really looking for a mind-blowing experience, we have a wide range. And so depending on where the new consumer is on that spectrum, for instance, one of our biggest selling beers is our Oktoberfest that we just finished selling last week. Our Oktoberfest is a very, very traditional style. It's a very traditional Märzen style out of Munich, Germany. It's not crazy. It doesn't have fruit from different parts of the continent. It doesn't have cocoa nubs. It's a very true style, but it's very accessible. My partner Dave Slosher and his team make it extremely well. And as a result, the consumers go crazy over it, even though it's a very, very easy drinking traditional style. And then all of us have crazy stuff, right? Whether we do crazy stuff that's a smaller niche that we're going after, but we're going after the people that like to have five different varieties of hops that they've never heard from before that have crazy flavor characteristics. And so as long as we're creating a broad range, we're going to continue introducing a broader range of consumers into the category.
Okay. Jen?
Yeah, you're never going to get bored in this industry. There's always going to be something exciting for you to try, and there's always going to be something for your palate as well. So if you look at the growth of millennials, I think for our market, personally, our market, we're finding 25% of our market is millennials, and they're going to grow up in this industry. They're going to grow up, and this is going to be what they've known. So once again, casting that net even further to like I said before with the wine drinkers as well. So those people that already have a refined palate and they've been appreciating wine for all these years, bringing them over and having them experience those same flavors in the beer world.
Okay, John?
I look at it in terms of just Fifth Frame itself. Where we can turn people over who are genuinely used to drinking coffee, and we can open up a whole new world of flavors for them just through beer, and having it be approachable. I by no means want to just knock your socks off with every style out there. If it was up to me, I'd just brew stouts and IPAs for my own personal interest, but I'm not. So I think it's best for business and it's best for us, to make it more approachable, where you can walk down the aisle and you can pick from either side. But at the end of the day, the whole goal is to just be focus on the quality and be delicious, and something to be proud of.
Stouts and IPAs are your personal?
Yeah.
That's two very different. It's like saying your two favorite comedians are Bobcat Goldthwait and Mitch Hedberg. It's like very different.
Well, you do realize that an escalator is never broken. It just turns into a set of stairs, right?
Exactly. That's great. And I'm going to be very careful with this because I don't want to bore listeners. And talking about flavors can be boring. But when you talk about, you know, understanding coffee and then thinking about beer in that same way, mm-hmm. We've talked about the coffee movement in this country and the interest in actually not just overcharring and making every coffee taste like a campfire, but actually being able to taste flavors. And there's more flavor in it. Is Colombian?
It's Colombian.
That you brought Colombian coffee that you brewed like 10 minutes before the show. There's more flavor in this coffee than just about any South American that I've ever had. And I think of South American sort of unfairly to South America as like a little richer, a little chocolatier. And I think of African coffee as a little bit more prickly and interesting and more elbows and knees. Yeah. This is more in that. So how would you describe the flavors here?
Oh, man, see, now you're really making me stretch. I think describing beers for myself is so easy. But for coffee, I sit there and I listen to the guys just go over these nuances and subtleties and romanticize over it.
People like Wade.
Wade, yes. Wade. And Jared, I mean, but their palates are so refined.
No, they are. They're really great.
But I mean, I like to chime in with the comic relief and go, you know, that tastes like a porter. This tastes like a milk stout. You know, here's a session IPA.
So which beer is this more in line with?
This one's more like a robust porter. It's got a fuller body. It's much more rounded. And this is me. So coffee people, please excuse my descriptions. I use my beer descriptors. But I mean, you get such a nice like a cocoa character. Reminds me of a lot of like pale chocolate malt, and you know, just a touch of a little heavy crystal in there too, like Special B. And it's just it's got a little caramel character. I don't know. I thoroughly enjoy it. And maybe I'm just converting over to coffee as I see my fellow colleagues just giving me looks.
No, I know. And there's a real risk of boring the heck out of the audience here. But I think it's really interesting if you open your mind to that, because a lot of the time I would walk into coffee shops and I hear that and I'd be like, come on. But then one day Tony Colone is like, there's blueberry here. And I'm like,
yes.
Did you put blueberry in this coffee?
Is it flesh or is it skin?
Yes,
and like,
exactly.
You can taste the difference. And the best part about this coffee is that it's not a pour over. It's not something that you have to wait 15 minutes for. This is our drip coffee.
Oh, wow. Well, it's outstanding. And if you're just joining us, he's talking about Fifth Frame, which is new, brand new. And you can go there now? Can you go there?
You can. Well, what time is it? Yeah, you can actually go in there and get a breakfast sandwich and grab a coffee, grab some Wi-Fi, and just hang out.
Until when?
Until 4 o'clock, every day, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m.
And on St. Paul?
On 155 St. Paul.
So Fifth Frame is doing beer, it's doing coffee, and I know it sounds pretentious, and I apologize for that, but it's not meant to be. It's only pretentious if you look down your nose at people, I think. And I don't know really many people besides myself who actually do that. No, I'm just kidding. I don't do that. No, I really don't. I think it's really accessible, and it's really fun, and you don't have to just pull out all these flavors. But I think there's a whole lot going on here. So anyway, that's it. We're going to stop on the Fifth Frame stuff. I got a few minutes left here. I want to remind you that Will Cleveland's piece in the Democrat and Chronicle, how often are you writing about beer?
I do a biweekly beer column, and then, you know, if there's beer news or, you know, openings or something I need to get to, I have a little bit of flexibility. But, you know, 90% of my job is still all of my crime coverage.
Yeah, okay. And John has an email that kind of pulls us back into questions on how we consider different categories of beer. So he writes, is the panel and discussion including pub-type outlets that call themselves breweries but have custom breweries brew what they call their own recipes? I'm wondering about that.
Yeah, we have a few of those in Monroe County, you know, like Lock 32 out in Pittsford, you know, has brewery in their name. They have a brewmaster who comes up with all of their recipes, but then they contract brew all of their beers through Custom Brewcrafters, CBs, out in Pontiac Falls. Twisted Rail down in Canandaigua does the same thing. So there's definitely those types of breweries, only in name, but still they have people behind the recipes who are, you know, responsible for bringing some of those flavors to you.
Does that take anything away from it for you, Will?
Not really.
Okay. Don, for you?
No, if you look at Sam Adams, the way Sam Adams started was exactly that way. They started off small with contract brewing and then very, very large with contract brewing until ultimately they decided to buy their own facilities. As Jim Cook is famous for saying, if you have a gourmet chef that comes and cooks a gourmet meal in your kitchen, it's still a gourmet meal. So.
Yeah, I mean, I am not an expert at all. I mean, I can't claim the mantle that Will has or anybody in this room, but I can say that just observing by tasting and being there in person, CB, for example, They do some outstanding work. And from what I can tell, Don, I mean, with their clients, you know, they're doing some pretty creative stuff for different, depending on what different clients want, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They've got a nice line of beers that they do for themselves, as well as the fact that, to Will's point, you know, if you've got the, you know, and Three Heads started by having all their beer brewed by CB's as well.
Yeah, now that $4 million space.
So, yeah, and so, you know, it's just a stepping stone for some people as far as, you know, getting to where they want and need to be.
Go ahead, Jen.
It can be a very successful model because you can focus on the sales. I'm just like, and Three Heads guys did it brilliantly. You know, they focused on sales, they focused on the recipes, and then they opened this amazing facility.
And this is the first beer discussion that, for a while, Jeff Dale was contractually obligated to be at every discussion about beer in Rochester. So it's been a little while since I've seen Jeff, who does have an even bigger beard, I think, than John.
Oh, yeah.
So Three Heads that started in that way, they've done just fine for themselves. We got a couple minutes left, and what I want to do is this. I want our guest to tell you maybe the beer that's most exciting them right now that they've got for you and anything that's coming up, because you mentioned it, Naked Dub's got something. I'll start with you, Don.
Yeah, so thanks. A little plug for our anniversary weekend this weekend. On Saturday and Sunday, we'll be celebrating our 7th anniversary. We'll be releasing a special beer. It's we're calling it our Viennaversary Bock. So it's a higher alcohol Vienna lager. One of the things that my partner Dave Slosher, once again, his brewing team do extremely well is lager beer. So we'll be releasing our Viennaversary Bock. And then if people come in wearing their Naked Dove gear, which there's a lot of people that have it, they get free samplings over the weekend. They'll be sampling out of pint glasses they take home, and they'll have the opportunity to win free beer for a year, which is defined as a free growler fill a week for a year. So, yeah, we'll be doing that from 10 till 6 on Saturday and noon till 5 on Sunday.
Okay. Jen?
We've got a cranberry.
Who's we, by the way?
Sorry. Young Lion Brewing Company out in Canandaigua. We have a cranberry Berliner Weiss. We tried to go a little bit different with our seasonal this year. Rather than doing a pumpkin, we said, you know what, let's actually go with something that that would be great for Thanksgiving, for the holidays, for New Year's. And it's a great beer coming out. And as I mentioned before, we took some time in developing our IPA. We went through something called a discovery series. So we brewed one, and then we listened, and then we brewed some more, and then we listened some more. And we're coming out with our final version of our IPA. And like I said, we're going to launch that in Wegmans on November 9th, fresh, canned the day before, and then fresh right in the store the next day.
And John Mervine, 30 seconds, co-founder of Fifth Frame Brewing in Rochester.
Favorite beer right now is going to be the first beer we put out, and then it'll be the second, then the third, then the fourth, fifth. Give me 30 days on that. Right in the middle of the holiday season, you know, keep tabs on us on social media. We have a really thick Instagram presence at Fifth Frame Brewing. If you like jokes and fun and just not taking yourself too seriously, but loving what you do, check us out. And also on Facebook. And please stop by the shop, 155 St. Paul, next to Tapas. You'll love it. I guarantee you.
Congrats to all of you on you know, the various levels of success and longevity and Fifth Frame just starting out, but it's a lot of work, and I think Will Cleveland did a great job at framing exactly what's going on in the craft beer scene. Thank you, Will. Great piece in the Democrat and Chronicle, and thanks for putting us together. Will Cleveland in the Democrat and Chronicle, is there a craft beer bubble in Rochester? Read that piece now. Our thanks to Chris Holden for his wonderful voice talents emulating the Monty Python crowd and all of the people who contributed to that sketch, including, let's see if I can figure out who they all were, Scott Pukas, Randy Gorman, Juan Vazquez, Denise Young, Brenda Tremblay, Megan Mack, me. Thanks to me. Thanks to everybody. Thanks to John Andrus, the engineer, and Megan Mack, producer. Have a wonderful afternoon, and we're back with you Thursday on member-supported public radio.